Mr. Loeb.
May it please the court, good morning. Jordan Loeb appears on behalf of Andrew Mahaffey. At its core, the facts of this case are not in dispute. Two men, over the course of 11 years and 327 separate acts, stole approximately $2.4 million from TDS. What is at issue is whether one of them can be deemed the leader organizer over another. I would submit to the court that this was a partnership.
But he's the organizer, though.
I disagree, Your Honor, respectfully.
What was his idea?
It was his idea.
And he picked Furness, right? That sounds like organizing. Every new venture has to be organized. He's the organizer.
I think there's a different perspective that needs to be considered, Your Honor. Every conversation starts with somebody speaking first. Every partnership starts with somebody speaking first. And that partnership develops and takes on its character. And certainly,
but then down the road, every time that one of these phony invoices was going to be done, it was initiated by Mr. Mahaffey.
That's how the scheme worked, Your Honor, and I agree. That's why I'm saying the facts aren't in dispute. It's what we make out of them. But when the scheme is set in motion, it takes on its own character that's distinct and different from what happened on the first.
So was there evidence that Furness would call, email Mr. Mahaffey and say, okay, let's do another one?
There was no evidence.
It went the other way, didn't it? From Mahaffey initiated each one of the phony deals.
Correct. That was his role.
If no Mahaffey, no crime.
If no Furness, no crime.
No, that's not true, because there are other people Mahaffey could have found.
Respectfully, that's not in the record.
Oh, yeah, but why not? Why couldn't he find someone else to pull up these?
Because
calls?
Timothy Furness for 11...
No big deal, right?
I'm sorry for interrupting. Because Timothy Furness for 11 years was Mahaffey's partner in crime, and he was his equal partner in crime because they each had their distinct and necessary role. The information that Mahaffey was supplying to Furness was inside information. Here's how my company is vulnerable. Essentially, if we wanted to boil it down to a very simple comparison, here's the day the door is going to be open. And Furness went through that door willingly, knowingly, because he understood his role.
Could he go through the door any days that Mahaffey didn't tell him?
He did not go through the door any
could
day
he?
That Mahaffey didn't tell
could
him.
He get, could he get the other end of the deal going without Mahaffey?
No, he could not. But I submit to you that's where abusive position of trust comes in, because Mahaffey knew when those circumstances existed. That doesn't mean that there was power and control that Mahaffey exerted over Furness. Furness at any point could have said, you know what, I'm done with this. But Furness didn't do that. What Furness did is improved what the outside part of this conspiracy operated.
I think your position would completely demolish 3B1.1C. Because you can always say that the secondary actor was essential and so on, and that's always true, but that's not the organizer.
I think there's other ways that the relationship is also viewed that wouldn't render 3B1 irrelevant. And one of the things is distribution of profit. Fruits of the crime. That's another way that the courts come back and say, okay, these clever defense attorneys are going to say the other person could have walked out at any time. So let's look at it a different way. What's probably in the business world the most significant determination of somebody's role in a business partnership? Split of profit. It's rare that you pay your subservients exactly what you make. Ask any law clerk, ask any new associate at a law firm.
Oh, no,
we know
that's
who's in charge.
Not right. If you hire someone to kill somebody else, you pay that person. You may not have any monetary gain at all. But you're obviously the organizer, leader, manager, and supervisor of the hitman.
It's an excellent point, but the analogy has its limitations because this was an 11-year partnership. It wasn't a single event where somebody chose, I need this service done, and I'm willing to pay X amount of money for it. So in this partnership...
Well, it's like having a long-term employee.
It is like having a long-term
employee. Yeah, but if you have a long-term employee, you're the manager, he's the employee.
I don't pay my employees the same as I pay myself, quite simply.
That, you know, is not true, because if you look at a big corporation, well, I have a better example. Look at a university. Who gets paid more, the president or the football coach? The football coach, right?
I'm looking for a club.
But he's a subordinate.
To whom?
To the president.
To the athletic director, more likely that...
Come on. He's the subordinate. He's going to be paid. The coach is going to be paid more than the athletic director also. And salesmen in large companies, a successful salesman may be paid much more than his sales manager. And yet there's no question that one is the leader and one is the follower. You look at the director of an opera company or symphony company. The director may be paid, is probably paid less than the conductor, even though the conductor is subordinate to the director.
I appreciate the argument, and I think we've had a recent...
An argument, it's a fact.
We've had a recent example of where that breaks down recently with Penn State, where essentially what we've learned is that
the football coach cannot be in charge of the university. A lot more than the president.
And he ran the university, and a lot of people have quit and have been fired, and Penn State is in a world of hurt because of it.
That's a really bad example, because it doesn't stand for the proposition that you must never pay a subordinate more than the people above him, right? It's extremely common.
It is a factor that the sentencing guidelines ask us to look at to determine who's in charge, and typically subordinates do not make more than the leader, organizer, or manager. I would suggest to the court that the exceptions are not the rule, that typically the people in charge make more than the people who are following orders. And I see that my time is getting limited, but I want to follow up with the point. These are all things that are part of a rubric that we take into consideration, and that there were areas that Timothy Furness exerted exclusive control. He did the banking in this case. And the scheme developed over time from submitting written checks to ultimately electronic transactions to setting up various bank accounts. And the record's quite clear. That was all Timothy Furness on his side for his part. He was a necessary and equal participant in this scheme. The parts of Mahaffey's behavior that are viewed as control are really his role as an insider at TDS. He had access to the information. It's not significantly more complicated than that, as he knew the vulnerabilities of the company.
That's the essential difference. He's essential to the scheme. Furness is not essential. There are many poll removers or whatever these people are who Mahaffey could have hired, but there was only one Mahaffey. No way Furness was going to get into this business by himself.
That's not the definition that we've come to understand as a leader organizer. Whether one is more critical than the other hasn't been part of the evaluation. It's exertion of control over another.
Well, you don't think control is essential for any 3B1.1 aggravating rule, do you?
I think the case law has been pretty clear that we look to that as...
That's not my question. It's a factor.
It's a factor.
Are you saying that control is essential for even the two-level adjustment? Our case law, I believe, indicates pretty clearly it's not.
No, I don't think it's a black-and-white test, no, Your Honor. I think it's part of the rubric, mm-hmm. and that you can't just look at individual components and not at others. It all comes together to paint the picture.
Which sounds like the kind of thing where we give quite a bit of deference to a district judge.
Quite a bit of difference in terms of the factual finding, in terms of applying the facts to the law.
Assessing how all those different factors work together?
I think so, Your Honor. But in the end, the finding in this case relied heavily on what Mr. Mahaffey's abilities and discretion were within TDS to support the notion that he was the leader organizer. And again, my argument comes down to that's an appropriate finding for abusive position of trust, but to have that spread over into leader organizer confuses the two, and those evaluations should be kept separate. And I'll reserve the remainder of my time if the court has more questions. Thank you.
Ms. Lenzendorf?
May it please the court. Good morning. Leah Philbeck Lenzendorf from the Western District of Wisconsin, representing the United States. The district court did not clearly err in applying the two-level upward adjustment for role in this case. Mahaffey coordinated, maintained, and orchestrated a scheme which defrauded TDS Telecommunications Corporation of over $2.4 million. Mahaffey did not specifically challenge any of the paragraphs in the PSR relevant to this enhancement, and as a result, the district court did not err in finding that it was Mahaffey who devised the scheme, Mahaffey who recruited Mr. Furness, Mahaffey who told Furness how to fill out invoices and fraudulently bill TDS for work that was not completed, Mahaffey who approved and remitted the invoices to TDS for payment, Mahaffey who lied to investigators and instructed Mr. Furness on what to tell investigators, and Mahaffey who directed Furness with respect to the distribution of profits. Mr. Loeb's argument was that Mr. Mahaffey and Mr. Furness were equals. And just to kind of follow up on the court's questioning on that point, they were not equals. Mahaffey definitely bore more responsibility. The central purpose of 3B1.1 is the relative responsibility in the commission of the offense.
And are you suggesting it would have been error for the district judge to deny the enhancement? Or is this just in the middle range where there's some judgment called for?
In any case that applies a role enhancement, it's so fact-intensive that I do think there is somewhat of a judgment call, but I think the facts in this case are clear that there was no error by the district court in this case.
Okay. So you're not suggesting that it would have been error to deny the enhancement?
I'm not suggesting that. In this case, there was information that flowed one direction, from Mahaffey to Furness. Mahaffey determined the amount, the frequency, and approved the fraudulent invoices. In this case, there was one person with greater responsibility, and that was Mahaffey. And if there are no further questions, the United States will request the court to affirm the district court's decision, and I thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Lenzendorf. Mr. Loeb, do you have anything further?
Very briefly, Your Honor, I want to pick up on the question that was asked. The way that the sentencing guidelines function is that winners and losers are chosen. In this case, for whatever reason, Mahaffey was looked at as the organizer and the person in control from the get-go, and Furness was given a break at every turn. And it happens
well,
in many
cooperated,
cases.
Right?
Pardon me?
Furness cooperated, right?
The cooperation was, I would submit, minimal.
And Mahaffey called Furness and left some voicemails and kind of telling him what to do or how to obstruct the investigation.
Furness called first.
Furness was
and Mahaffey called Furness. And yes, get the story straight.
Cooperation was hardly unimportant. The critical fact was his decision to following up on what Judge Hinton said, was to reject Mahaffey's invitation to try to conceal the offense.
TDS,
extremely important. On
TDS had already, at that point, they were looking for confessions. The jig
sure.
was up at that point.
That's the whole point.
But so much easier.
But that's why he got his downward departure for cooperation. It does not change who's a leader.
And you suggested that it was unimportant.
Where I was going with the point, Your Honor, is that there are choices that are made at every stage of the game, up to and including sentencing, which sentencing bonuses certain people get, who gets immunity, and it is discretionary, was the point that I was going to make in terms of the court. Sentencing court does not have to determine in a two-person criminal enterprise that one person was the leader organized. That's really the point I wanted to end with.
And many times the courts don't. But in this case, the district judge knew the case and made that determination.
Correct.
That gets a lot of deference.
Understood, and that's correct. It's really the application of the law to the facts. Were there enough facts to support that legal conclusion? And I thank you for your time and attention.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Loeb. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, sir.
So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client, and we thank Ms. Lenzendorf as well, and move on to our next case.